Okay, welcome on into the InterNoun Show. It is episode 34, Sunday evening, 6:30 Eastern, April 20th. Happy 420 to those who celebrate. Loon Mags. Been 2 weeks since the last pod. Had just the craziest week of all time. Craziest 2 weeks of all time, really. Maybe I'll talk about that in the post game, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, a lot of sports to catch up with. Just watched the Timberwolves low-key destroy the Suns in game one of the Western Conference playoffs. So that'll definitely be in there. Twins are playing. They're losing. And then Vikings draft talk coming right up. This Thursday, probably going to take work off to watch the draft. Work being singing in church in the evening. Probably going to take that off to watch the draft. Trying to think of what should I talk about first. I think we should maybe go over the Masters first. And then we'll just go sport by sport. Because obviously kind of for all the three teams that we cover on this podcast, important things happening for all of them. Two of them obviously playing, one of them is in the playoffs, the other is the very beginning of the season, which tells you a lot about a team, and then the other is about to go into the draft. It's draft week for a team that is probably one of the teams that's looked at as like the most important, like what is this team going to do, is going to like affect how the draft goes for everybody else. Let's get to the Masters. Was able to watch a decent bit of the Masters despite being very, very busy that weekend. My Masters recital was on Monday. So Sunday being the night before, was stressed out about it, you know, not really too locked in on the golf, I'll be so honest. Actually had, well, Loon, my mom, came down for my recital, so she was here Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and so kind of had to worry about like what she was doing some of the times too and all this stuff. So I actually had dinner with Loon's girlfriend and Loon, my mom, on Sunday night, kind of as the Masters was ending, but thankfully for me, not having to. I don't know. Obviously, I would have preferred a better finish, but I guess I'm lucky that it wasn't that sick of a finish because I would have missed it either way. just kind of, you know, sometimes in life things just have to happen, and that was kind of the only day that we could have made that happen. But anyway, Scotty made it boring, and that is just a massive compliment to who Scotty is as a player. He's one of the boringest players out there on tour. And he'll just be better than you, tee to green. And if he's putting well enough, then there's not a lot more you can do. There's other people who drive the ball far. There's other people who are sort of masterminds around the green and the short game and all that stuff. There's other people who putt better. There's plenty of other people that putt better. But at Augusta National, which is a course that is such a fair test and sort of one of the best golf courses in the country, in the world, in the history of the game, for that reason is that it's going to test every part of your game. There's nobody who's as consistently good at every part of his game right now than Scottie Scheffler. And there's been people saying, you know, all week, you know, a couple days after he won, even leading up to the event, that there's nobody who's been as consistently good at every part of the game as Scotty is right now since Tiger Woods, people are saying. That's, of course, if he's putting okay, because that is sort of has been the one dull spot, if you could say, or one spot where he struggles a little bit more, where this field will make it up to him or make it up on him. Watch the Faribault on a Thursday and Saturday when, you know, Thursday is obviously, you know, the first day of a Masters is always like, doesn't entirely mean anything. Some days Bernhard Langer is 3 under and he's leading in the clubhouse, all this shit. Like, you never know actually know what's going on. But by the end of this Thursday, you could kind of see who the players were going to be this year. And that's Scotty rising up to the top of the leaderboard. Max Homa was present at the top of the leaderboard. Bryson was up there. He obviously ended up falling off as the weekend sort of progressed. That's a live thing, maybe. Just kidding. But then Friday and Saturday were a whole lot of, like, just don't die, don't completely fall out of it. And a lot of people, you know, went over par where even just kind of holding steady on what you had been doing was more than enough to keep you right where you want it to be. Scotty just stayed at even par on Friday, and then was actually 1 under on Saturday, and then obviously had a great round Sunday afternoon to win everything. Like I said, Friday and Sunday were sort of a more standard Augusta conditions. All the best players played really well on those days, and that ended up sort of being the difference in the championship. So Scotty was better at that than everybody else was. But then Thursday and Sunday were what I just said. I'm getting lost in the weekend. People, you know, get confused at the day sometimes. Friday and Saturday were just about surviving, and he actually did that better than everybody else did too. So ended up being not a great finish. 4-stroke lead by the end over Ludvig Åberg, who actually had a sick round two. He must have gotten in before sort of the trouble happened in the weather. Tommy Fleetwood at -4, Homa there as well, Morikawa at -4 as well, Cam Smith and Bryson at -2, Xander Schauffele at -1, Will Zalatoris, Tyrrell Hatton, Cam Young rounding out the top 10 at T for 9 at even. A lot of great names there. Not a lot of them had a lot to say on Sunday, so it ended up being a little bit boring. This is sort of Ludvig's arrival, I would guess you could say, in a major. He obviously didn't win. He was never going to win, but I think real golf heads knew who he was and have known who he was since last year, but for many that aren't, they're like, who's this guy? And this is maybe his first sort of big world watching, played really well, had a chance to win at least at points on Sunday moment. I wrote a thing back when I was still writing, which I guess I'm writing right now too, actually, but back when I was still writing about golf, at least, I wrote a thing about Colin Morikawa's first PGA win, and he was there, right, in the leaderboard this weekend. But the thing I wrote was Bryson and Brooks are going to, like, lead the headlines for the, because this is the peak Bryson and Brooks, like, beef when they were both in the PGA Tour and they hadn't left for LIV, all this other stuff. And they had big, shiny games. You know, Bryson obviously had the distance thing. He was weird. Brooks, you know, had the thing where he just plays, like, fucking nails every major, like, all these sort of, they were big and shiny and exciting to talk about as personalities and as players. And it was a lot of narrative around the golf world that they were going to kind of run shit for the next few years. And what had happened in that PGA, and this was sort of one of the first events after COVID and all this other stuff, but what had happened in that PGA was Colin Morikawa had kind of spoiled it. People knew who Colin Morikawa was, and he was a pretty good young player, but he spoiled it by just being really good tee to green and making enough putts. And I said, like, I remember writing that in that thing, that he's going to do that forever. and going to end up being more successful, or at least as successful as Bryson and Brooks. I wasn't actually wrong about that, but everything that I said Colin was going to do, Scotty's doing to even greater extent. Colin's now had won 3 majors. Did I make that up? 2 majors? I always forget. We had talked about this on the last pod. I can never remember who's won any majors. But anyway, I was saying, Colin's going to be so boring on some of these major weekends when all we want to do is talk about Bryson and Brooks, that he's just going to win more, going to end up winning more than both of them. That hasn't really happened yet because Brooks has won a couple, and obviously that storyline has kind of disappeared. But everything that I thought I was saying about Colin can now be said about Scotty, where it's just he shows up and is so boring but so damn good that like any storyline you're looking for just kind of doesn't happen. And then that's the biggest compliment you can ever like give to an athlete, is he's boring in a good way. That's like I remember watching, I hated Tim Tebow as a kid. I remember watching Florida games, just hoping against hope that they were going to lose. And every time they would win, and I'd be like, I'm so fucking sick of this Tim Tebow guy, cause he's boring in a good way. Same thing. Like 2 years ago, Anthony Edwards should have been more boring in a good way, and the team would have been better. Now I think we're getting there. Anyway, that's the Masters wrap up. Let's talk about Wolves probably next, because they're in the playoffs. That's actually important. So it wasn't a great end of the season, right? Or last 2 weeks of the regular season to sort of get where we were. Talked on the last pod about how we're, you know, hanging around top of the league, right? Still in contention for the one seed. There's some like weird tiebreaker thing where we were better than Denver in the tiebreaker and better than OKC in the tiebreaker at some point, but then still we didn't get the tiebreaker. And according to tiebreakers, we were in second. I don't know actually how that worked at all. I really have no idea. That being said, it didn't end up not mattering because we lost to Denver on the third to last game of the season, 116-107. Jokic had 41, couldn't do anything about him. This was before Cat got back, so really only two bigs tasked with covering the Joker that we were comfortable playing. Obviously, Luka Garza, you know, is the third one that we aren't comfortable playing. So we had 41, 11, and 7. Basically, anything that he wanted to have happen was happening. I believe that's 11 rebounds and 7 assists. I think that's what I wrote in my notes. And he's a very tough guy to just let run the game because he's, you know, the best player in the world potentially, and you let him run the game and it's just not going to go very well for you. Ant had 25, played a pretty good game, got out rebounded pretty bad as a team, and it was very weird. I mean, we didn't make very many shots in general. Both teams were below 60% from the free throw line, which is really weird. But for me, the game, Ant had like 50 the night before too. So like, was he a little bit tired? There's also a chance that he was a little bit tired. Saw some people going online about like, oh, he maybe shouldn't have gone for 50 when, you know, the next game's important. Who gives a shit, you know? Hopefully, knock on wood, we're winning this playoff series and it doesn't end up mattering at all. But I think when you have a chance for 50, you go for 50, because those are big nights in a guy's career, you know. Ant will probably have quite a few of them. But either way, got out-rebounded pretty bad. And like I said, just nobody made foul shots. It's very weird. It was not a game. Obviously, the game was very impactful as far as the seeding went. But this wasn't a game that I watched and it was like, okay, we're significantly worse than Denver and like we're concerned about it. Cat was out of that game still, and that was a game that felt, you know, a very big lack of another really, really skilled big guy that can score with anyone in the league type of thing. So he's back now. So anyway, wasn't worried about that. I actually was worried 125-106 against the Suns. Was this the last game of the season? I believe it was the regular season. Because we had not matched up well against the Suns at any point this year. I believe we were 0-3 against them. I might have made that up. But certainly a couple bad losses in the past month or so, or even the past like 2-3 weeks, where we either couldn't score against them or we couldn't defend them in different games, and they beat us handily in both games. This was one where we just couldn't defend. There's 125-106 in their favor. Especially without Cat. And Cat was in this game, right? So this isn't a without Cat game, but this was kind of the first game back. We see in the NBA a lot of times guys in their first game back just aren't really the same as you expect them to be moving forward. It felt like they were just as big as us. Obviously, Nurkic is significantly less talented than Cat is, and probably than Rudy Gobert is, but he is a very big body that not every NBA team has and that or can play that often. And KD can compete with anybody size-wise and is a lot more comfortable on the wing than, you know, our bigs are. Obviously, Cat is comfortable on the wing on offense, but he's just not as good of a wing defender, the type to, like, guard KD. And Rudy is really, really good at switching from the wing to the paint and all this other stuff, switching back and forth, getting there. Ray Allen tweet. That's a different podcast joke, my bad. But even Rudy is not guarding KD on the wing. So, like, that's just a matchup that that team has that no other team can really hang with defensively. And so, like, our size advantage isn't as big of a thing against the Suns as it is against other teams. That being said, we beat them in this game, which we'll get to in a minute. In that game, Beal had 36 and didn't miss a three. He shot six of them, made all six. Booker had 23. Grayson Allen had 23. If that team is getting 20 out of Grayson Allen on a night with the other options they have, then they're a very, very difficult team to beat. And so Ant also had played bad against the Suns in every game. They just kind of, especially without Cat or with Cat being not that relevant, they just kind of point all of their defensive efforts towards Anthony Edwards, and it was successful a couple times. Let's talk about the game they just played, and we just won, so that's huge. And then maybe the matchup as a whole and what it looks like moving forward. I was thinking about recording this podcast before the game we just played, but I took the fattest nap of all time. You know, when you just, like, die for a couple hours and then you come back to life? That's kind of what happened. So, game one. Big, big win. 120-95. 25-point win is big on the scoreline, but also crucial to take game one in the series, especially at home. Kind of need to do it. Ant put up 33. If you go a battle of stars, Ant put up 33, KD put up 31. So we're already, that's already a, you know, a matchup in our favor right there. And then our bench just killed them. Nikhil Alexander-Walker with a big game. Naz Reid with a big game. Obviously having Cat back and playing really effectively is huge for us. Not only because he's a great player in his own right, he provides the starting group with very high-level post-scoring and perimeter shooting. But when you're able to push Naz Reid to the second unit, he is just an incredible scorer off the bench for the second unit. He probably seems like, I think that it, you know, based on X.com sort of the vibes, it feels like Naz Reid is probably going to get Sixth Man of the Year. I think Malik Monk out of Sacramento is the other big name for that award right now, so it's going to be one of those two. Looks like Rudy Gobert is going to get Defensive Player of the Year as well, which there's a significant number of people mad at both of those things that would rather see Malik Monk as a sixth man on the eighth team of the West get it over Naz Reid or Victor Wembanyama as the best defensive player on the 14th best team of the West. They want him to get it as well, but I think the sort of direction, the vibes are going in favor of both our guys on those awards. Tonight, though, Anthony Edwards, huge game for him, especially the way he struggled against the Suns a little bit. 33 points and 4 of 8 from 3, 14 to 24 overall. So pretty efficient, obviously high volume as well. 9 rebounds, 6 assists. Carl had 19 and 7. Classic Rudy Gobert game with a double-double with more rebounds. 14 and 16. But what was I going to look at? Naz Reid. Naz Reid had 12, only made 2 threes, but was really good otherwise. He had like a coast-to-coast steal into a Euro, into a reverse lay off the left side. That was, you know, I mean, it looked like John Wall playing at Kentucky, and it was, you know, 6'10 Naz Reid playing against the Suns. It was pretty fucking sick, I'm not going to lie. Kyle Alexander Walker had 18 points off the bench, 29 minutes, so he played him a lot. 4 of 9 from 3. He's been really good since Kat's been out as well. And honestly, everything we kind of thought that Monte Morris was going to be when we got Monte Morris, Nikhil Alexander-Walker just like stepped up and sort of started doing those things. It's been actually kind of interesting. Your job gets threatened just a little bit and all of a sudden you start bawling. Which you love to see. You'd rather have it be that way than the other way. But yeah, this looked like a completely different Timberwolves team against the Suns, as we've seen in some of the other matchups, which is great to see, obviously. I noticed a lot of sort of active hands on defense, getting steals, turning into fast break points. I haven't looked at the numbers for that to see if that's true, but that was just something I noticed, sort of just sitting there like a dummy watching the game. Let me see if the numbers reflect that. We shot slightly better than from three. Let me see. Here we go. They actually had more steals than us, but we had more fast break points. I don't know. That's just something I noticed, I guess. Maybe when it was humming nicely, that they were getting those, and that seemed to be more of a catalyst. But like I said, really good win. Now, doesn't necessarily mean anything. I don't know. Obviously, it means something. We only need to win 3 more games, and they need to win 4 more games. Is this the type of performance that we can replicate again? I think kind of yes. Kevin Durant played really well. Beal was 6 of 10 from the floor, had 15 points. Booker was 5 of 16, could have been a lot more efficient. But the difficulty with this Suns team and where they are going to be disadvantaged against us is in the bench points. If you read their bench, Royce O'Neal, D. Eubanks, I think it's Devin Eubanks. Just kidding, it's Drew Eubanks. Is that still Thaddeus Young? That guy's 90 years old. Holy shit. Josh Okogie, Naz Little. I think his name is Naz Little, right? Nasir Little, yeah. Goose Mason Wisco, used to love that guy. Bol Bol, he got in at the end when they were getting blown out. Eric Gordon, he's speaking to people who are 90 years old. You know, this is not a deep bench. And so to hang with the star power, to get a bunch of points out of Anthony Edwards, to have Kat and Rudy pitch in a little, you know, enough on the scoring end and on defense, all this other stuff, and then to just kind of blow them out in the bench points, I think that's a very good strategy to beat this team, and one that really wasn't available for us in the past games that we beat the Suns in, or that we lost the Suns in because of Naz having to be moved to the starting lineup. Can we do that 3 more times? Based on today's game, it feels really good. Obviously, they'll have, you know, their say in their home building all that stuff. Loon Schmidt might be in attendance cheering for the fucking Phoenix Suns. Who knows? But it feels good. Everything we kind of needed to see from this game. Anthony Edwards having a big game. Comfortable win. Nobody going stupidly off against us. All of those things happened, and we got the win. It'd be one thing if we got the win and they shot 30% from the field, and it's like, okay, well, they can't shoot that badly again. Or it'd be one thing if we barely beat them and, you know, some fluky shit happened. But it was comfortable and exactly the way we kind of drew it up. Also a game in which we're scoring 120 is always good to see, because that's, you know, if we're going to have a difficulty, it's going to be on the offensive end. Anyway, let's have a prediction. This is kind of cheating because there's already been one game. I'm going to go Wolves in six. Wolves in six. I think they take two on the home court. Well, no, they would have to take two in a row in the home court. I don't know. Maybe they take one in our place and then one on their place, but then we get one on their place. I don't know. Anyway, Wolves in six, that's my prediction. This is a more talented team than a six seed would indicate, but I think we're still better. All right, let's move to the Twins. Since the last pod, 4-6. And this is after starting 2-3 or something. I don't remember. Total, we are not good. All right, the Twins are currently 7-12. 6.5 games out of first place already. We're in fourth place in what we thought was the worst division in baseball. The Cleveland Guardians are actually very good this year, at least so far. You know, it doesn't mean anything at this point. Who knows? But they're actually very good right now. Twins are 7-12. Let me just read through some numbers. Also, we had five losses in a row at one point to the Dodgers and... Wait, not the Dodgers. To the Orioles and Tigers. Since last spot, I'll just read it through. We won one against the Dodgers. We lost against the Tigers. We won against the Tigers. We won against the Tigers. So we split the season series against the Tigers. Then we lost the last game against the Tigers. We lost all four against the Orioles. Started a new series with the Tigers where we lost the first game. And then we won just today. So, what's the problem? We are 30th in the major leagues. These are stats as of like 2 days ago, so they probably changed over the past two games, but I had time to look it up 2 days ago, so I'm going to talk about them. We are 30th in average. There are only 30 teams in Major League Baseball, so that is last. We're last in average. We are 27th in on-base. So almost as bad. That's fourth worst. And the teams that are worse than us are like the Chicago White Sox, the Miami Marlins, and not even the A's. Like, people thought the A's were going to be so dog shit coming into the year. They're not even that bad. They're better than us. They are bad. They are still bad. But they're better than us in some of these categories. 27th in slugging. 28th in on-base plus slugging OPS. Which makes sense. Given that we're bad in both of those. Going into the deeper stats, right? We're 15th in average exit velocity. Which is like, oh, okay, we're league average in average exit velocity. Which means that when we hit the ball, it's going very averagely as fast as every other team. But we are 23rd in hard hit percentage, which is similar. It's just how many balls did you hit hard, and there's like specific metrics for beating into that. But we're averaging over 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, which I couldn't find an exact list of like who's leading the league in strikeouts per 9. I didn't look that hard, to be fair. We are, I think, seventh in the league in total strikeouts, having played fewer games than everybody else that was ahead of us. So, like, the Dodgers are leading the league in strikeouts because they've played 21 games and we had played 17 at the time I looked, because they went into Korea and all that other shit. We've had a couple games canceled, whatever. 10 strikeouts for 9 is not good. You know how the Vikings 2 years ago with the Ed Donatell off defense could turn any quarterback into, you know, prime Patrick Mahomes? You know, Jacob Eason, like, cooked us up. Like, that's, we're doing that right now, but for opposing starting pitchers. Like, every starting pitcher can just waltz on into the Twins game, or the game against the Twins, waltz on into Target Field, put up their career high in strikeouts over six innings or whatever, and then leave just fucking happy as hell because we can't hit at all. I haven't been able to watch a ton of the games. I've been able to pop in here and there, but I'm seeing this from a lot of people I trust on X.com as well. It's just that there doesn't seem to be a good approach. Like, there doesn't seem to be, like, anybody in the Twins that has a good approach. And that, it used to be so different. The Twins that I grew up with, you know, the Mauer Morneau Twins, like, there wasn't anybody in the league that had a better approach than Joe Mauer. Like, it's statistically beneficial to see pitches. Like, that is sort of a fact of baseball that it's realized within the last 20 years that the more pitches you see, the more successful you are on average. And that having a good eye is just as important as good contact skills, just as important as good power. And that's what we got so used to with Joe Mauer. We got so used to with Luis Arraez, to be honest, as well. It seems like nobody has that skill on this team, that nobody has, like, a sort of prepared approach to any pitcher that they're seeing. David Popkins is a name that I've learned the past week or two because he's the hitting coach, and you never want to know the hitting coach's name because you never – whenever teams are hitting really well, you never are like, oh, the hitting coach is doing a great job. That's never the case. Whenever teams are hitting badly, you're like, okay, who is this guy that's behind all of this? You never want to know that name. Sort of like an offensive lineman, kind of, where you only know when they mess up. You only know the hitting coach's name when the team can't hit at all. So anyway, David Popkins is his name. We very much know his name because they can't hit at all. They're last in the league in hitting. Now, can this change? Kind of, maybe. The fact that they are 15th percentile in exit velocity means something, right? It means that when they do hit the ball, they're at least not horrible at it. The big issue, obviously, is when you're average at hitting the ball hard and you strike out more than anybody else, you end up being a really bad offensive team. Because all of the strikeouts are not included in the exit velocity stat because there's no hitting the ball. Another interesting stat. We are last in the league in batting average on balls in play, or BABIP. That is actually a good thing because BABIP is pretty much impossible to, like, do well. Like, if that's not true. Generally speaking, if you're hitting the ball hard, your BABIP will be pretty good. That means that, like, you're making good contact, your contact is liners, hard ground balls, things that are likely to be a hit, not soft fly balls, you know, rollovers, whatever. So if your BABIP is super different than your average exit velocity, that means you're actually being very unlucky, or you're being lucky if it's much better. Like, if our BABIP was second in the league and our exit velocity was 15th, that means we're getting super lucky with hits that are landing versus hits that aren't. Our BABIP is last in the league and we are average in the exit velocity in the league, which means we're actually getting a little bit unlucky. Now, if this luck sort of levels itself out and we get an average BABIP, then we are going to be still a not very good hitting team if we take the same approach and are doing the same things we're doing right now because we strike out just way too much and our exit velocity isn't that sick. But that's at least some hope that we maybe turn into like the 20th best hitting team and not the 30th best hitting team. Obviously, the thing that'll change all of this is getting some of our guys back healthy. Correa went down. Royce Lewis is a huge... Whenever this team has hit poorly, Royce Lewis has seemingly never been affected. So getting some of those guys back, and Correa should actually be back soon, will help. But just better approaches from everybody else, sort of warming into the season the way we did last year. If that's a thing that we can replicate, I don't know. Saw some people throwing around the idea of hiring Joe Mauer as the hitting coach. I wouldn't be opposed. Feels like a stupid idea, but I don't actually think it is. It's like an idea that some guy that doesn't actually know anything would be like, oh, I'll hire Joe Mauer. But, like, Joe Mauer would help. You know, he'd be able to tell the boys what to do. Anyway, I've talked too much about random bullshit stats. As when I looked up these stats, Buxton was under 200. Julian was still under 200. He's supposed to be a high average, high on base guy. Neither of those things are happening right now. Kirilov, who had been tearing the ball up early, has cooled off a little bit. His average is back in the mid-200s. Santana's still at 135. That's a problem. We kind of brought him in to hit. Miranda's actually been okay. Austin Martin has been decent. He's batting somewhere in the 240s or something like that, if I remember correctly. He actually is not... He was a very high-valued prospect when we got him. He was in the Berríos trade, but from Toronto. But he kind of cooled off in the minors, didn't advance as quickly as we would have hoped, and sort of just kind of plateaued off in AAA for a while. He's here kind of out of necessity. But he's actually hit pretty well and been pretty good everywhere else. He's played good defense in center field. And in the middle infield. So overall very positive based on kind of what the new expectations of him had become. Jeffers is hitting better than any catcher in the league right now. He's just absolutely tearing the shit out of the ball. So, you know, we're doing that thing where we have like one hitter that's good at any point, and then the rest are all pretty much just like completely useless. Right now our one hitter is Jeffers. Okay. I mentioned the Correa injury. It's an oblique injury, which is usually a bad sign, but I read something by some nerd online that it's actually not a torn oblique or an oblique strain. It's a intercostal muscle injury, which are the muscles between your ribs, and they actually like heal way quicker than the obliques, which kind of cross over your ribs and your back and all that other stuff. Both related to rotation, which is obviously like the main important thing in baseball. To the pitching. We have two good starters and three bad ones. Bailey Ober was actually pretty good in this game. We maybe have two good starters, one medium one, and two bad ones. Chris Paddock and Louis Varland have been very bad. A lot of, especially on the pitching side, the plan for this year had been, okay, well, Chris Paddock's good. You know, he went on Tommy John, but at least he's good. He's going to be like a number two starter for us, and so we don't have to worry about that. And we just kind of forgot the fact that, like, maybe he won't be good. Or, like, Louis Varland's good. He had, like, a couple good relief outings for us last year. Like, we'll give him a four starter spot, and we'll be good. Like, we'll be fine. And he actually hasn't been good. Pablo Lopez has been great. Joe Ryan has been great. So really no complaints there. In general, the pitching isn't the issue, as I mentioned. But two of the starters have not been very good. And have we played some good offensive teams? We certainly have. The Orioles are a very good offensive team. Dodgers are a very good offensive team. That's the kind of it. The Tigers are not, and the Royals are actually playing very well right now. We got two or three of them from them to start the year, but they have been playing very well since then. Bobby Witt is kind of one of the best players in baseball right now. Which makes me feel like a genius because I watched him in AAA and I, you know, said all that shit. Anyway, I think, like, there's a lot of talk on Twins Twitter, and most of it is very, very annoying, about how the ownership dropped the payroll by $30 million and the team is now worse, and it's, like, directly their fault. And, like, all of that stuff is true. So I guess I don't want to, like, say any of that is wrong. But there's only so much you can, like, complain about before it's like, okay, they clearly weren't going to spend the money. But, like, we can move on. But I guess the more annoying part to me is just, like, assuming that, or maybe I guess I'm, it's all sort of the same problem. If they would have spent more money, they wouldn't have had to assume, you know, so maybe I'm complaining about the same thing. But just assuming that Chris Paddock, off of a UCL injury that took essentially 2 years of baseball from him, is just going to be good. As good as he was the last time when he was 2 years younger with a clean UCL. It's just kind of a crazy assumption to make, and I feel like we all just kind of made it, not even thinking about it. Or assuming that Louis Varland, on a super tiny sample size, is going to be good and a viable starting pitcher in the major leagues. We all just kind of assume that. I think we're even, like, more guilty of it with the Julian stuff. And maybe he's going to be better. Maybe he gets better. But we saw, like, four good months of Eddie Julian. And we're like, okay, he's, like, good. And so, like, we don't have to worry about second base. And he hasn't passed over the 200 average mark yet. You know? So, like, you give somebody five good months, usually you don't just assume that they're, okay, yeah, we're good with him now. And there's not necessarily a lot of evidence to prove that you can point to and be like, oh, he's definitely not another Jose Miranda who had a couple good months and then disappeared forever. Now he's back and he's playing okay. But we had sort of turned Eddie Julian into a new Royce Lewis when his sort of story as a prospect was a lot similar to Miranda's. And now I hope I'm wrong, but we're kind of seeing the other side of that where, and I, like, I'm guilty of it too. I came on here and I said he's better than Luis Arraez and all the stuff. We won the trade, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I'm worried about it. Last year was awesome. We broke the playoffs drought, had a really fun team, won a playoff series, and a lot of that was led by rookies or young players. Is that necessarily indicative that then these young players are going to be the plan forever right away? And I think we answered that yes in the way we built this team, and the answer seems to be no right now. Hopefully the team will improve. I think it will. That being said, when you have a team that is 7-12 and is the worst hitting team in the league, there's two things that could be true. One of the things is the team is starting really slowly and they're going to turn it around and actually be okay. That it's just a slow start, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's still April. The other thing that can be true is that the team just isn't very good. And I think if we ask ourselves which of those is more likely, I think the more likely thing is that the team just isn't very good, as hard as that is to admit. I mean, if we go the other route, a lot of these guys that are struggling right now have had success in the league, have had success recently. A lot of the games we have lost have been very close. If we figure out the offense, The pitching has actually been decent. The bullpen, low-key, and this is, you know, credit to the front office, the bullpen has the best strikeout rate in the league as far as bullpens go. Has been very good. You know, despite the game where we took out Pablo Lopez and then the bullpen blew it. Despite that, the bullpen has actually been very, very good. So that's a plus. That's obviously a good thing. And that's kind of narrative you have to walk yourself down to imagine this team being good. You know, we get Royce Lewis back, we get Correa back, who has actually been hitting the ball really well, and everything is kind of okay. Obviously, Duran comes back and makes the bullpen even better, or allows for some regression from some of the other guys we didn't expect to be that great, and takes over so the bullpen as a whole is still really good. Griffin Jacks, by the way, has been incredible. All that is to say, I think it's 50-50 on whether this team is actually really bad or is decent and it's just a bad start. Anyway, let's move on to the Vikings. The draft is this Thursday. I believe 8 p.m. Eastern. I have to look this up. NFL draft time. 12 p.m. That's just not accurate. Seven p.m. on. Seven p.m. Eastern. Oh, so it's even earlier. I definitely got to take off work for that. Yeah. This is the first time in my memory where the Vikings go into the draft as like maybe the most interesting team. So obviously one of the biggest quarterback drafts in recent memory. We have Caleb Williams probably going to go number one. Drake May and Jaden Daniels sort of competing or differing. People have differing thoughts about which of them is going to go number two, which of them is going to go number three. Then it's, I believe, the Chargers at four don't seem to need a quarterback and so seem to be very open to trading a quarterback. We have a huge need for a quarterback, seem intent on trading up into that four. Nothing has actually happened. We've gathered, you know, some sort of fodder for trades or some sort of draft capital by moving back into the first round with another pick. But we haven't actually made any kind of move to move up to four, although the whole world thinks that we are going to. So, I mean, this is kind of the first time that I remember that what the Vikings are doing affects sort of the whole trajectory of the draft in general. Seems to be all anybody's talking about. Like, what are the Vikings doing? Are they moving up to four to get J.J. McCarthy? Are they moving into three to get Drake May or Jaden Daniels? Are they going to stay put, draft a defensive player? I obviously have my opinion of what my least favorite scenario is, and that is moving up to four to select J.J. McCarthy. Oh, it's actually the Cardinals at four. That's my bad. They don't need a quarterback either. They're sticking with Kyler. The Chargers are at five. If I was the Cardinals, I know they're not going to do it, but I might draft the quarterback. I wouldn't draft J.J. McCarthy, though. Anyway, we are currently at 11. And 24, I believe. Or 23. And so there's three options, right? The one I like the most is to trade up into three and select whatever quarterback hasn't been taken yet between Jaden Daniels and Drake May. I think there's a lot of – obviously, Jaden Daniels is a Heisman winner. He was incredibly productive with his legs and his feet. Has some issues avoiding hits, but that's just a lot of sort of you have to teach it out of him kind of thing. It's not like he can't do it. All the talent is there. It's just finding the refinement and finding the sort of stopping the mistakes and all this other stuff. Drake May feels very similar. All the talent is there. Made a few more mistakes than you'd like. Can throw the ball really far. Feels like a bit of a Josh Allen thing. Now that the league has seen Josh Allen, they like want to see it in him. I'm okay with either of those. I think that immediately after the college football season ended, it seemed like Drake May was a clear number two and Jaden Daniels was a clear number three, despite him winning the Heisman and all that. And then somehow over the past couple months, we've just decided that it's a lot less clear and some people like Daniels more and some people like Drake May more, and maybe Daniels is actually more likely to be number two. I think that's all kind of stupid. I don't know, like, what makes people change their minds over a bunch of months without football, other than just being bored and like, overanalyzing things. I think what you feel after you've just watched the football is probably more indicative of what it actually should be. And when I just watched the football, I thought Drake May was really good. If we could somehow get him at three, I'd love that. I'd love that. That is my favorite scenario. I almost don't even really mind what we have to give up within reason, draft capital wise. If we are going to move in, so that's my favorite. I'm not even going to talk about the thing, my least favorite option, until we get to my least favorite option. My second favorite option is to just draft two defensive players with the first two picks that we have in this draft, and then draft kind of whatever quarterback is available in the second round, just see what happens. We have Jonathan Greenard now. We lost Danielle Hunter. So we have a need at edge. We've had a need at corner for most of the past 5 years. If we draft a high-end corner, maybe a Terrion Arnold from Alabama, I'd love that. You know, maybe the guy from Clemson, I believe it is, right? Or did I lie? There's a good corner out of Clemson, right? Right, let me look this up. Or am I thinking of somebody else? Arnold was the one I had my brain on. I might have completely made up the corner out of Clemson. Hopefully not. High-level ball knower here. Anyway, if we do that, or maybe we draft a Jared Verse. I've been on this podcast a couple times saying how much I like Jared Verse as the edge. And then we draft a corner at 23. Like, I would kind of like that. And then second round pick, the 11th pick in the second round, we take a Michael Penis if he's available, you know? And if he's not, then, like, fine. We'll roll with Sam Darnold for a year. I know that's probably not great. Nobody wants to hear the we'll roll with Sam Darnold for a year thing. But, like, maybe bring a Spencer Rattler to compete. Like, I don't know. I think if you could guarantee that Justin Jefferson stays around, the best decision for this team is to get better on defense and draft the best quarterback available next year, or make a move for a free agency for a guy that's available next year. Because if we can't get into the top three, I don't want to use draft capital on a player that I don't fully believe in. And I obviously don't believe in J.J. McCarthy. I don't think J.J. McCarthy is significantly better than Bo Nix or Michael Penis, and I'm kind of out. So obviously my least favorite decision is to move up to four and draft J.J. McCarthy, because you're blowing draft capital on a guy that seemingly, to me, doesn't have any upside. Obviously, I don't work in this industry, and there's a lot of people that work in this industry that think this is a good idea. I don't see it. If he's a Viking, I will, and he plays well for us, I will eat my words, and I hope that happens. But It may even be like a possibility that we have to take a quarterback at 11 that isn't JJ McCarthy, and it's like a Bo Nix type thing. Even if we do that, like, I'm okay. I don't want to use up more draft. Joel Embiid just got hurt. Joel, I'm watching the Knicks and the Sixers game. His knee is fucked. He just threw it off the backboard and dunked it, and now his knee's fucked. That's tough. That's tough for the Sixers. Imagine watching your season go down in like one play. Looks like non-contact as well. And it's the knee he injured. Jesus. All right. Tough for them. I just don't want to give up draft capital to draft JJ McCarthy. Is that what we were talking about? Yeah. You know, I like any edge. I like Jared Verse. I like Latu, I think is his name. Latu or something like that. I like him as an option at edge. I'm not going to pretend that I've watched a lot of tape on some of these guys, but if I see you as a first round player, you're at a position that we need. You know, that's kind of what I want to be seeing. I mean, that's my take on things. I'll obviously pop back on here next week, share my opinion on how everything went down. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be very interesting to see. All right, I think that's all. Post game is, I don't know. My life has just been too busy. Had a recital on Monday where I sang, just me on stage for like an hour. There's a video of it somewhere. My send to the loons. Maybe post it on the loon Twitter. Just kidding, that'd be crazy. Then I have to sing this solo for this concert that we have coming up that, like, I just got randomly chosen to do. Didn't really want to do it. Don't really want to learn it or, like, spend the time to do it because I'm kind of checked out of the whole music thing at this point. But had to learn it this week. Didn't look at it before the recital. So then had to learn it in, like, 2 days, which, like, none of you know anything about what that means, but that's kind of difficult to do. And then had this other show that I got chosen to do that I didn't really want to do at the company that I work for, so I can't really say no. It's not even through my job, but it was through the school, but like in collaboration with my job. But so I didn't want to say no. And then, like, the company low-key got sued for trying to perform the opera that we were going to perform. Or, like, we're going to get sued for it. Like, they got threatened with legal action if they perform it. And so that got, like, changed, like, 2 days before the performance, which is just crazy. Performance is literally on Monday, and we just got, like, what we're going to do. The new thing that we're going to do now. So that's been crazy and stupid and I hate it. That's kind of been all my life. But yeah, it's actually like way better to not have a recital to do anymore. So that's the positive side of this post game. Anyway, kind of a lame post game. Don't really have anything interesting. Actually, Loon, my mom being in Miami is just, it's a experience every time. She's like so terrified of everybody else in the city. She like thinks that she's gonna do something wrong at all times. She actually low-key shoplifted two apples on accident because she was holding it in her hands and forgot to put it on the grocery store like belt thing when we were at Publix, and then she like didn't want to go back in and pay for them because she was scared. But anyway, yeah. Loon, my mom, came to Miami for 3 days and did not leave the neighborhood once. She did not get a rental car. I drove her everywhere she needed to go, which was like no places because I was at school for some of that time and like busy and stressed for some of that time too. So she definitely had the peak Miami experience, staying in the hotel and watching TV and going to a mall in the suburbs. So shout out to Lou and my mom. Way to live it up in your big trip to South Florida. Anyway, I don't know. That's the pod. Palm tree, Miami. Peace.